Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for being here and welcome to the Charge Podcast. Today, I have Erin Gallagher with me. She is the founding partner of the company Have Her Back. And I am so excited for this conversation. I feel like I can talk to you for hours just based on the 10 minutes that we've already been talking. So welcome.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm really excited to be here.
A question that I always start with is, when you were a freshman in college, what did you imagine your life to look like right now?
Oh, wow. Okay. So that was 20 years ago that I was a freshman in college. Very different times. Although 6 months ago was very different times. I thought that I was going to be a lawyer. So I think in terms of career, that's the path that I was planning to go down. And I think that I also thought that I would be married and have kids. So in terms of where I was going to live, like as a daughter of a military officer, my mom was in the Coast Guard for 25 years. We moved all the time. So I was never a person that always knew I'd end up in some specific place, nor was I afraid that I wouldn't be in the place that I currently was. So I think that was it. It was just sort of like, I'm going to be a lawyer and I'm going to have a family. Mm-hmm. And only some of that is true.
When did that shift?
So when I was a senior in college, a lot of my friends that were a year ahead of me were in law school already and they hated it. And they said to me, if I could do it over, I don't think I would have gone down this path, but I'm already a year in. And so I've invested time and money. So I'm going to see it through. But they recommended that I work at a law firm before I really go down that path. So that's what I did when I graduated. I mean, I took the LSAT and everything. Like, and I, after I graduated, I moved to DC. I went to the University of Michigan. So I was at Michigan, finished, and then moved to DC to work for a nonprofit law firm called Service Members Legal Defense Network. And our entire mission was to lift the ban on gays in the military. And so it was an amazing first real professional experience. And working with people that are mission-driven is just, it's inspiring on levels that I can't really explain.
It's everything.
Right? It's everything. And so everything shifted for me in terms of my career path then, because I realized I did not want to be a lawyer. And they all told me, don't do it. And nothing against lawyers. I have a lot of lawyer friends and I know a lot of wonderful people who are lawyers. It wasn't going to be the right career for me. And so I went into more of a marketing communications PR field, but that mission piece stayed with me. And even though I didn't really execute on it until another decade passed, because I was working in agencies and companies, it was there. It was always there.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about your career journey right after college?
Yeah. So I was at SLDN, Service Members Legal Defense Network, for just over a year. And then I made the decision that I needed to shift. And so I moved back to Michigan and worked at a PR agency. And I was there for about 2 years, 2.5 years. And I knew that I wanted to be in Chicago. And so this again was like during the height of a different crisis in 2010, mm-hmm. 2009, 2010, of like a lot of job loss and the auto industry going under. And at the time, the agency I was working for had a ton of auto clients. And so it was on its way sort of down. And I made a choice. I said, either I'm going to just go to Chicago and have the move be first and then try to get a job, or I try to do this from another state, which was going to be much more difficult. So I just kind of took that leap and I moved to Chicago. And so now this is 10 years ago, maybe a little more than 10 years ago, and just sort of pounded the pavement. And that's where I got my next job, which was at Golin, a PR agency owned by Interpublic Group.
And how long did that take for you to get that first job in Chicago?
Yeah. So it was, once I was on the ground here, it was 4 months.
Okay.
But I was definitely looking and doing remote interviewing and searching for 3 or 4 months before that. So it was really hard. Mm-hmm. And as someone that had didn't have a lot of breaks in between doing things. No break in between high school and college, no breaks in between jobs. This was a very confusing time because a lot of my identity is my career. And you also find a lot of your value in people that are valuing your skill set and what you bring to the table. So it was a bit of an existential experience. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I remember thinking there are so many people like me right now that are trying to get jobs that are qualified. And so how am I going to differentiate myself or stand apart? And so I created a resume that was not a traditional resume, and it actually was much more conversational. Mm. And so it said things like, you know, if you've read this far, like, keep going, like at different points in the resume. And then I think my tagline was, resumes are boring, I'm not.
I love that. Right? Oh my gosh.
Like, and connect with me, call me, reach out to me, and I'll tell you more. Like, your life will thank you. It was just, more than anything, it was an attempt to stand out. Mm-hmm. And I got a lot of feedback from people both ways. Like, people that were friends of my mom's that were saying, this is too out there. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think this is going to work. This industry is not going to understand that. And then I had people that obviously called me back because of it. So what I've learned over time is you're going to have people on both sides mm-hmm. of whatever choice you make. And you just have to trust the one you've made and stay out of the comments, mm-hmm. right? Like, stay out of the comments of, and I mean that literally and figuratively, right?
Yeah.
Right? When you post something and you have, again, people that are super supportive or people that like want to take you down, don't focus on that because they're always going to be there. And the more you're out there about who you are and what you want, the more chance you have to get feedback from people that you don't want it from.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Right? So
then you got the job.
Got the job. And I, you know, I started out really junior there on mm-hmm. the new business team and worked my way up. And eventually, I mean, I was there for 10 years. And by the end, I was running global marketing for us. And what I think was interesting about my experience there is I was in a small enough department that there wasn't always the next obvious role, step, whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I was able to create a lot of what my next opportunity was going to be. And I had people there that wanted me to be successful and were on board for that. So that was, I, you know, every 2 years I got a little bored. It's just, that's kind of maybe my personality. Mm-hmm. And every 2 years I moved into a different role, responsibility. And so that's how I stayed there for a decade, which sounds really long
to me. Wow, that's incredible though. What did that process look like? I'm wondering, did you think to yourself, I'm bored, I want to create a new role? Did someone higher up approach you? Like, what did those different transitions look like? Because I feel like a lot of people probably listening can relate. If I feel a little bit stuck in my current role, I want to move up, I want to transition in the same company, but I'm not really sure exactly what to do.
Yeah. It was a combination, but I think it was definitely driven more by me. You have to be your own and best advocate. And you can absolutely find people in your organization that will sponsor you. Right? It's this difference between sponsoring and mentoring, where sponsoring means you're not in the room and someone is thinking of you for that next job, that next opportunity. They're advocating for you when you're not there. They are stepping up for you and putting themselves on the line at times in order for you to have a new experience. That's much different than mentoring. That is more of a reactive process. So you have to find the people that are putting themselves out there for you. That's absolutely important. But more than anything, you have to ask for what you want, because that's what I realized. Like, the worst that could happen when I asked for something or wanted to do more is that I would be told I couldn't. And then I had two choices. I would accept it and think about something else, wait a little bit longer, or you go somewhere else. Like, right? So I think what would happen to me is once I got my job down and it wasn't as challenging, that's when I would start to feel that itch that I would want to be doing something more and would want to continue learning and being challenged. So it was those times that I started to really seek out other people in the organization or seek out new projects or new opportunities or think about things that I wanted to work on or learn more about and just kind of bring them in. Mm-hmm. Like you're ready for your next thing when you are already doing it. Like it's very rare that you are promoted or you're brought into a new role cold turkey and True. You have no experience. It's often that you're you're already doing it and now you're just being recognized and rewarded for it.
Mm-hmm. So. Can you share a specific story of something that you did to then get promoted or a different job?
You know, I can think of two examples that sort of the impetus was a little bit different for both of them. One of them was that we were growing our department. And so when we were able to start bringing on more people, that meant that I could give up some of the things I was working on to reach for some of the things that I wanted to do more of. So I think that like probably 2 years in at the very beginning, when we were really starting to build the case for the importance of the marketing team in our role within the agency and in our role in getting new business and building our brand and in being a place where people wanted to work, we were able to then bring in more people, which meant I could take on more. So I think that's one example. It's really easy to get really good at something and want to hold on to it because it's comfortable and because you finally know how to do it and you're proud of it. You have to be able to let go of that. And you have to be able to let someone else take it on and maybe do it a little bit differently and do it their own way in order for you to reach for something else, right? You can't hold on to both. So I had to learn that really early on that I needed to find a way to delegate, mm-hmm. delegate and move. So that was one. And then the other one came when my boss left. I had a couple of bosses actually leave over the course of my career and they were replaced two times. And the third time she wasn't replaced. And that's when I was really ready for more. I was kind of her right hand. So I was doing so much of that work that I felt that I could begin to take that on. And, you know, it's funny. When she left, I pulled together a whole plan for the transition, what I was going to start to do, what I would hand off to others on the team, how long I thought it would take for me to do that. And when I presented it to a senior person, I was told, you're not ready to be the boss. And it just kind of threw me back. And literally that is, if I can think of like five professional moments, that's one of them that I will never forget. And what I did with that is I had a couple of choices, right? I could say, I am not good enough. That's what that message could be. I could take it that way, right? I could take it as I'm being too ambitious. And this person doesn't think I'm quite ready. The other thing that the person said was, you know, you're like a dog with a bone, which essentially means that when you want something, you go for it until you get it. And again, this is a narrative that women are told is not attractive. It's you're too ambitious. You're not a team player. And then conversely, oftentimes men are told you're a leader. You're a go-getter. You take initiative. And so we're told two different narratives about ourselves. And so when I heard that narrative, my response internally was, oh, I'll show you. Right? It was sort of like, yeah, I don't agree. And you know, you don't always have to agree with the narrative that's being told about you to you. It's not the end of the conversation. And so truth be told, I ended up doing the damn job and I didn't really get the title or the bump for quite some time, but I did do the job. And so the lesson there was sometimes the way that you handle something is not comfortable for those on the receiving end. And so their response to it is much more about them than it is about you. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of what I started to learn about my role, you know, at this agency is that not everyone was ready for me in all of the ways that I came to conversations, came to projects, came to the table. And I just wanted to make sure that I didn't dim my light to sort of fit the space that I was being given to exist.
Mm, I love it so much. I have so many follow-up questions. My first is, did you always have this spirit within you, like this fiery, ambitious, driven spirit? And the belief, I feel like you have a lot of belief in yourself.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that, I mean, my mom absolutely instilled that in me. I think when you're told from a very young age that you can do anything you want to do and that you have the full support of so many people to make it happen, you don't feel the limits that are there. It's when you start to get out into the world. And I don't really like that phrase, the real world, because it's all the real world, right? So it's more when you get out into corporate America and in its simplest and most sort of like black and white form, you face a lot more adversity than you do when you are in more protected spaces that you might be more protected spaces when you're growing up. So mm-hmm. I think it was always in me. And the feeling of wanting to lead in whatever I'm doing, and not from a egomaniacal way, but in more of a want to inspire people around me to do their best mm-hmm. and to all work towards something, whatever mm-hmm. it is. It can be as simple as like when you're on a soccer team and you are all working towards the goal of winning the game, up to when you are doing what we're now doing as a business, where your mission is to tackle equity differently and authentically with all the companies that we're working with. So I think it's just always been about kind of harnessing innately what's in people to help them to reach their full potential, and then together realizing like how powerful that can be. So yeah, mm-hmm. it's been there.
Mm-hmm. Second question I have is, I really like when you talked about sponsorship and mentorship. I've honestly never heard of the term sponsor, but I love that. But I do want to talk a little bit about mentors. A ton of girls submitted questions on how to find female mentors and what that mentorship process looked like. So I was wondering, what did mentors look like for you in your career, especially when you were younger, maybe like right out of college?
Yeah.
I'd love to hear about that.
Let's see. Right out of college. It's your network, and the network of people that are around you, I would say, is your first sort of line of mentoring possibilities. And back when I was a youngster, we didn't have LinkedIn, mm-hmm. right? So like, you know, what are the ways that oftentimes it was your alumni network of your college or your high school, tapping into that and seeing where those people are, what organizations they're in, and then reaching out to them and saying, I really want to learn more about the work that you're doing. So I think that, you know, when you think about how busy everyone is and the asks that people already have of them, one of the best ways to approach someone that you are interested in gaining that knowledge from or creating that relationship is to say, you know, I want to learn a little bit more about you, and then what can I do to help you, versus here are some things I need you to give and do for me. Mm-hmm. So let's say you've identified someone at a company that you think would be an amazing mentor for you. Do a little research on them ahead of time and find out what they're all about and what they stand for and what they're doing at that organization. And then ask for a specific amount of time that is not too much of a commitment, 20 minutes, and say, I would just love to ask you these three questions live. And then I would love to offer myself as someone that can help you with X project that I see that you're working on, you know, for free. And you could give me feedback on how I'm doing. And that, again, is a chance for me to learn and grow. So I think that mentoring is much more of a relationship and ability to help another person learn and be connected and to be given feedback on something that you're doing, right? Where sponsorship, again, is really more of like you're not in the room and I'm advocating for you. So sponsorship happens much, much more often within an organization, mm-hmm. right? Because that person is helping you to move up and move forward, whereas mentoring can happen across multiple organizations, across generations, all of it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anyone that you actively mentor right now, other than, of course, the companies that you're currently working with Have Her Back?
Well, now I feel bad.
Looking for charge, girls.
Right? I'm like in a global pandemic with two small children. I have not done a good job of mentoring. I think I'm mentoring myself in starting a company. That's kind of what's going on right now. We have a wonderful intern, Alyssa. I'm not doing a good enough job mentoring her right now because she has really helped us over the past few months to get our social off the ground. And you know, she's an amazing designer. But mentorship takes work. And it takes time commitment. And, you know, I think that the way that I probably can show up best for people right now is in connecting them with people that I think can help. Mm-hmm. Because it isn't always going to be me in that moment. And it may not even be right in terms of industry. But the network that I have created over the course of my career and just like with the amount that I've moved around, that is something that I can so easily do and brings me a ton of joy, you know? And like, I have sort of a life motto that, knowing smart women is my life hack. Mm-hmm. And I really believe it. And then beyond that, connecting those women gives me like a contact high, right? Because again, watching them create a relationship and build off of one another and support each other is what this is all about. So, you know, I think that my form of mentoring right now is through my writing. If I can put something out there that talks about me being vulnerable and the challenges that we're facing and the importance of being authentic about it, I hope that that then brings some sort of strength to others to do the same.
Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely want to talk about your writing, but we'll get to that later. The other two follow-up questions that I have to the first chunk that we talked about. One, when it comes to negotiating salaries, this is like kind of a little bit of a pivot, but I know you talked about having just so many different roles within your previous company. What did that look like? Because that was also a big question that quite a few people asked.
Yeah. I think that that is probably the biggest challenge that women have is the discrepancy in what we're paid versus what our male counterparts are. And I'm just speaking in a binary way right now, right? Because that's what the majority of the data and the research has covered. So we know that when women enter the workforce, that first promotion that they get, men get a significant percentage higher of that first promotion, right? So it's called like the first rung of this ladder. This was the research that Lean In did with McKinsey last year. And so what happens is women never catch back up, because if a man's getting a 30% higher increase in his first promotion, if they both come in at the same level, then she will never, ever catch back up unless she leaves that industry and comes back in at a much higher number. So my advice would be, if you know that, then you know that you need to make sure that you're getting in higher to begin with, and that that first promotion is meeting a threshold that is going to allow you to stay competitive. So do your research. Find out what market value is in your market. So what someone makes in San Francisco is much different than what someone makes in Duluth, right? It's just, that's the way it is. So you can't compare that. You need to make sure you're comparing apples to apples. So do your research, find out what your market value is, and figure out what the band, you know, what that band is from sort of the range based on experience and whatever the role is. And look for companies that do pay equity analyses and actually answer the call to any sort of discrepancy that they find. Because if you're going to work for a company that doesn't even do that, then you know already that there's potential that there is a gender pay gap. So I think that's what we're also seeing with like so much of the way that consumers and the way that employees of these companies are viewing where they're going to spend their time and energy is at companies that take care of them and that are really fighting for an equitable place in terms of pay, in terms of opportunity, in terms of leadership, all of it. So first do that research and make sure it's a company that cares about it, and then find out what you should be getting paid, mm-hmm. and then demand that.
Mm-hmm.
Now is a time where I think there's a lot of anxiety around jobs because of all the layoffs that we've seen and because of the uncertainty of how long the quarantine is going to last with COVID. But your value is your value. And so I think, you know, what I've always learned is like, you don't get what you don't ask for. You just don't. And you, no one is ever going to take a job away from you if you counter. They're just not. They're going to say, we can't meet that number. Here's where we can go. So again, the assumption when you are offered a job is that you're going to counter. And maybe over time that will change when we stop making this such a game. But the fact that it's like that right now means just come in with the information that you need to make the best ask for yourself.
Mm-hmm. When you say do your research, do you have any specific websites or other resources that you can point the people listening to?
Yeah. I mean, Glassdoor, I think, is a great resource in terms mm-hmm. of understanding what the experience of current and former employees is at that organization. And that will also show you the pay ranges. There are a lot of wonderful websites that are constantly looking at and doing research around the gender pay gap. And so honestly, you could just really Google salaries and then, you know, salary ranges for X industry in Chicago. And then you will start to get some really good information there. But yeah, I mean, I think Glassdoor is a pretty great resource. And LinkedIn mm-hmm. too, you know, has a lot of really great information on the jobs that are available out there and sort of what people are saying about them.
Mm-hmm. Last question before we dive into have her back.
Yeah.
Did you ever want to quit Golin prior to obviously you leaving? And I'm curious, like, what that looked like. Like, did you ever look for other career opportunities, or were you just so committed for that entire decade you were there?
Okay, so we're doing this without drinks. did I ever want to quit? You know, of course. I think that, you know, any job where you're there for 10 years, you're going to have challenging times, and you're going to have times where you don't necessarily agree with the direction that either a project's going in or the focus or the priority for the year. Mm-hmm. And so I think I definitely had times of frustration, and sometimes it was about something, you know, at a higher company level, but sometimes it was about just maybe frustration in my own role and the amount of influence or autonomy I was being given. So I think that, like, I was never actively looking to go elsewhere. Of course, you know, you have people reaching out to you that are talking about opportunities, and you have to make decisions around that. But what I think always focused on and found was, is there a way for me to do the next thing here where I've already really started to build a major network and camaraderie and, you know, my own sort of brand within the company? And institutional knowledge is something that you only gain if you're there for a significant amount of time. And so those were things that made it very attractive to stay. Where I think you have to start to think differently is when you're just so comfortable. And it's just, and that is the thing that's keeping you there, is the fact that you kind of know how things work. You know everyone. You're not challenged to a degree that makes you really push yourself outside of your comfort zone. And so when I started to feel like those things weren't aligning, that's when my gaze, like, kind of went beyond the doors. Mm-hmm. And it was, again, when I felt like, you know, there's this great phrase that says, don't shrink yourself to fit into spaces that you've outgrown. And I just think that I had gotten to a point where I was starting to outgrow the space that I was given there. And that isn't something that's not necessarily a knock on the organization. It's just a reality of myself and what I wanted and what the place and the role was for me there. And I just think that it was time for me to move on. Mm-hmm. So I did.
I love to hear the conversations that you had with yourself, with your current founding team before starting Have Her Back and deciding, all right, let's pursue this. And happy almost 1 year.
Thank you. It's so wild. In COVID times, right? Mm-hmm. It's like dog years. I don't know what the algorithm is, but it's dog years times 10 or
time?
Something.
What is time?
What is time? What is time? Yeah. Never did we think in the middle of our first year of business that a global pandemic would hit. But I think where, you know, Have Her Back, we started it as a mission at Golin. And it was really in response to Me Too and Time's Up and the fact that we were seeing all of these offenders being walked out the door. So often they were very senior white men or senior men. And that was a good step, right? There was a reckoning that was happening with sexual harassment and sexual assault and gender discrimination. There was a reckoning. And what we were concerned about, though, was the fact that it's fine to walk those people out, but no one was really addressing the culture that they left behind. And what was going to happen to all of the women whose careers lay in the wake of these individuals who had really made their lives living hell? What those women had either left the company altogether, or they had been forced out because they came forward, or they had left, they left the industry because they just didn't feel like they could thrive. So that's what we wanted to address. We wanted to put a call out to our industry, to the PR industry, to marketing, to advertising, to say, what are you going to do? What actions are you going to take that will actually show that you, that you've created a place that these women want to come back to? And then once they're there, how are you going to have their back? How are you going to support them and help them? And how are you going to create an environment where they can thrive? So that was the initial point. And we had such wonderful responses and support and people that really wanted to make some changes and do things. And then a year in, we started to get inbound requests from companies that were looking for the team that was working on this mission to help them with their product development or their, you know, new policies they were creating or their marketing and communications. And so we recognized that this was no longer just a passion project of ours or a side hustle. Like, this was a business. And that's, again, this, you know, you asked about, did I ever want to quit? It was, again, like I had outgrown the space that I was in. And I had outgrown sort of the role that I was doing. And the mission piece of this goes all the way back to my first job out of college. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of came full circle where, could I actually create a career for myself that was not disjointed from what I was so passionate about, believed in, and thought was the most important thing for us to figure out in the world, was how to make it more equitable for everyone. Could I really live with that being something that I only was able to get in on nights and weekends? And I couldn't. And, you know, I think the other thing to mention here is that I became a mother in the past 4 years, and I have two kids under the age of four, and that starts to change your priorities as well and where you spend your time and your energy and what matters most to you. Mm-hmm. So all of these things were converging, right? At the same time, this was there was like this cultural zeitgeist that was taking place. Like, I was dealing with my own sort of like evolution as a human. Like, I'm becoming a mom and I'm trying to figure out where I fit in this still, because as a mom, you lose yourself so much of the time. And I was going through all that. And then we had created this mission that was really important to us and was not something that we could put on the bottom of the pile of work. It needed to be the work. So that's where we said, okay, this is it. We're going to do this. This is where we are going to move our lives next in this direction. And so that's what, I mean, Carolyn and I said, we're starting, this is going to be its own company. And mm-hmm. Pamela, who was our former chief people officer at Golin years before that and had gone on to another company, and I had always kept in touch with her, when we thought about what this was going to look like, we knew we needed this outside in sort of holistic offering. And so for me, being like the marketing and comms person, which is internal but mostly external facing, and Carolyn, you know, former chief creative officer, really working to inspire people, to inspire behavior change through big ideas and creative thinking. And Pamela, whose entire, you know, work experience had been in HR and talent and diversity and inclusion. And she was, you know, the former global head of diversity and inclusion at PepsiCo. So she had like the, you know, the brand experience as well. So we had this really interesting mix of like the full spectrum of what it means to be an authentic company where you are doing what you say you care about externally, internally, right? It's like, it's the full spectrum. It's matching those actions and having there be no gap between what you say you care about and what the actions you take to actually back it up. And so we got together and said, okay, this seems like a really inconvenient time to start a company. Everyone agree? Do we just stay in our corporate jobs, all three of us, knowing that this is this pull that we're having, this that we have for years felt that something was moving in a different direction for us because of what's happening with the world, right? I think this happens for people a lot of the time where you have a moment like that and it's so scary that you say, there's no way, I'm just not going to do it. Like, it's too risky. There's so much chance for failure. A lot of people are not going to be happy with it. And so you walk away. And I think we just, the three of us, we are agitators. And what I mean by that is that, like, we don't just accept things as they are. We have questions about whether or not they're as good as they can be. And we just walked towards the fire. And we did. And there were a lot of people who were incredibly supportive. And there were a lot of people who were really not happy about it. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when you take your power back, right? When you take your power back from those that have it over you, they are rarely happy about that. They're rarely happy about it. And when three women do it, mm-hmm. it's even more contentious. And, you know, again, I go back to my statement earlier, staying out of the comments. Like, I had a lot of messages about defining who I am and what my decisions are by people who I didn't ask to give me that feedback. And you just delete it. You really do. Mm-hmm. You don't give it any energy and you don't give it more time than it took you to read it. And maybe you don't even finish reading it because it doesn't matter, right? You need to go towards what you think is right. And you surround yourself with the people that are supportive of that. And you know full well that you are going to come up against people that are very unhappy that you had the guts to do it.
Were those people at Golin or those people outside, like your friends or random bystanders? Like, who were these people that were making these comments?
Yeah, you know, I think that like it was a combination, but it's, what's the best way to sort of describe it? I think that what happens when you are very clear on what you want, that is disorienting for a lot of people, because if their view is that you need more from them to make decisions than you actually do, that's something that they then have to sort of sit with, and it might actually cause those individuals to rethink their role in what your life is and what your life was. So what I won't do, because it's just not worth it, is like get into every specific person.
Specific names, please.
Listen, there's a book coming, so I'll say that. Okay, I'll say that. And maybe that is where I'll be more specific. But it's just, here's the reality. What I learned is that if you are a woman and you are ambitious, it is going to be a rocky road ahead. It just is. Mm-hmm. And I only like to surround myself with ambitious women. No, I like all kinds of women, but, and men are wonderful too. But what my point is that like, we have got to stop this narrative that undercuts women that have dreams and goals and go for them. And why do we make, you know, the words that were used to describe us, are words that are used to describe so many other women that started their own companies that I've had either individual conversations with, or I've listened or read about. And it's this whole notion of being selfish and being, you know, like, I mean, I guess selfish is like there's lots of different ways to say that someone's selfish. Like you're not a team player and like you're just doing this for your dreams. And you're not thinking about how this impacts other people. And I just don't think that's the whole narrative. Mm-hmm. When you do something that for yourself, that doesn't make you selfish. Right. So I think that we have, as women, we need to really decide how much of that feedback we're getting that we are interested in actually taking to heart, and what we actually are going to just delete and walk away from because it's actually not worth our time.
Mm-hmm. Powerful stuff.
It was a long summer.
Oh my gosh. Were you close friends with the other founders prior to starting Have Her Back?
So Carolyn was technically my boss.
Oh, wow.
So you know, it was sort of a funny reporting structure because, you know, the head of creative overseeing marketing, but it's the way that we were doing things. And we were just very aligned in, you know, what we wanted to do to help the company and with branding and with like the messaging and all of that. So, you know, I was told by the, you know, the most senior of people before Carolyn even started, you two are going to get along amazingly well. Like, I just know that there's going to be something special here. And neither one of us ever knew that this was going to be it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, you know, 2 months before this started to become an idea, this was not on our minds, right? We didn't start it as a mission with the intention of it becoming a business. It is how it evolved. And we paid attention and we gave it the love it deserved. And a lot of amazing initiatives and missions at all kinds of companies fall away because they are no longer a priority. There isn't a budget for them. They're not seen as business driving. They're not seen as revenue driving. And we just refuse to let it die. And so I would say that, you know, Carolyn and I had a very strong professional relationship, and then we became wonderful friends. And she has been so supportive of me in and outside of professional, you know, settings from the get-go. I mean, she was, you know, one of the people who, you know, came to see my baby for the first time. So, I think that we had a very special connection from the very beginning. So it wasn't surprising to either one of us that we would take this very significant risk together, because this is a risk. Like this wasn't an easy road. And it also wasn't, it wasn't for certain. Right. And it, and of course, I don't think anything ever is, but when you have people that you really do trust and that you feel have your best interests in mind as much as the collective, you will leap into spaces that don't have a clear net. And so that was absolutely what it was like for Carolyn and I. And it was absolutely what it was like for Carolyn and I with Pamela. And, you know, Pamela leaving Golin a few years prior was a huge hole in our experience and our hearts and all of that, right? Because Pamela, that's the type of person that she is. That's that's the space that she takes up when she's in a room. And so I kind of like, you know, sometimes I think back to those different points and I'm like, God, we never knew. But man, it's so funny to think about that time we were working on that project. Or like, again, I think back to like before Carolyn even joined, you know, Pamela and I got together a group of 10 women because we saw that we were having an exodus, and many agencies were, of these rock star, you know, young women that were just becoming mothers and were leaving. They were leaving within a year or coming back. They were leaving while they were still on maternity leave because they didn't feel like they had an environment where they could thrive, or their priorities shifted. So, you know, I think back to that and it's like Pamela and I were trying to get to the bottom of this. Why is this happening? How can we do a better job? What can we do here that will support them? What policies can we change? So again, it's like when you look back, you see the thread and you're like, you know what? This really wasn't out of the blue when you think about the things that we all worked on together and focused on and cared about. And it was always about advancing the rights and the experiences of women and of people of color and of bringing these people into positions of power and influence and making sure it was more equitable. Always. Like that was always the driving force. So why not make it the full-time thing, you know?
Wow. Are you able to share any specific favorite stories from any of the companies that you work with Have Her Back?
Yeah. So I think that we will have to do a different episode where we can talk very specifically about the companies themselves. What I can say in more of a general way is that when we started this company and we launched in September of last year, right? So we signed our deal and became official August 26th, which is what we count as our 1 year. And then we went out with the news September 5th. So that was more of like our announcement date. But when we started this company, it was a different world, right? September of last year. And did people care about DEI? Absolutely. Was there a lot of momentum behind advancing women? Absolutely. And then a global pandemic hits. And I would say that the first 3 months of that pandemic, this pandemic, was much more focused on people maintaining and staying afloat than doing anything that was going to be above and beyond. And so after George Floyd's murder and the civil unrest that followed, and essentially a social, you know, revolution that has taken place, the reason we started our business has now become one of the top priorities of every Fortune 500 company. So we are not having to sell in why this is important in a way that we may have a year ago to any degree. And so what I will say is we made a decision at the very beginning that we were only going to work with the willing. Right. We were only going to work with those who had good intentions and just needed the support to move those good intentions to more intentional actions. What we were not going to do was convince people that women and Black people and people of color were worthy and had skills. Right. That is not the group that we are speaking to. So we are working with people that care about this and want this to not be a moment, but want this to be a different way forward, a movement, a new way of doing business. And we are doing some incredible work in the middle of very, very large global companies that are changing the way that they are working. And then they're changing, again, because of their size and scale, the way that everyone works with them. That's the type of transformational change we had hoped this would be able to do from the get-go, right? This was not going to be just a really well-done, beautifully designed, cute campaign. This was going to be about getting inside and changing the infrastructure and tackling the barriers, the systemic issues that exist that actually are stacked against women and people of color, right? And so now that we're doing that, we're living the dream. We're living the dream of why we started this business. And it really does help that we are at a moment in culture where this is everyone's priority.
Yes. Yeah, it's funny because I have a question on here that I don't even need to have you answer, but I asked what has been an unexpected favorite part of founding Have Her Back? And it's like, what? Like you guys literally started this at the absolute perfect time.
Yeah.
God's plan.
Damn. I mean, right? We never, and again, so that goes back to when your gut is telling you something, right? And this, there, that was happening for us, that we were saying something is going on. Mm-hmm. Like I remember saying to Carolyn and to Pamela, like when we were in the beginning of figuring this out, where I was like, something is happening. Like I'm getting, people are reaching out to me about stuff, or I'm like connecting with someone, or I'm seeing something, and you can just sort of tell. And it's, I think this is what happens when you put good things out into the world. And when you start to really do the thing you were meant to do, is that mm-hmm. it comes back to you, and you begin to attract people that are of the same mission driven spirit. And so again, it's like, you just have to be ready to put it out there and be ready for both the support, but also the, I mean, I can think of 50, I can think of 50 words. I'll try to think of one that is the cleanest version to use, but it's the feedback that you, it's unsolicited, and honestly, it's unwarranted.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Can you share how your approach with Have Her Back can be applied to individual people?
So we like to say that, like, no one company and no one person is going to solve equity, right? Just like no one company and no one individual person is going to solve climate change. And so we have to stop thinking about it in those big, broad terms that are sort of paralyzing, because then you think, well, there's nothing that I can do that's going to make a difference. Mm-hmm. So I think so much of what we talk about in terms of what we consult with our clients to do as a business are things that are applicable to do at an individual level. And it's, start to surround yourself with people that don't look or think like you. And so if we're talking about individuals, even outside of a professional setting, like, do you have any Black friends? Do you have any Asian friends if you're a white person? And if you don't, start to dissect what that's about, because even if you are a non-racist person, a good person, if you haven't brought that into your life, then you really are surrounding yourself with people that are a lot like you. And so how can you do a better job of diversifying your friends, your networks, diversifying what you read, where you buy your products, right? We were talking about this before we started the podcast. Make more of an effort to seek out women-owned businesses, Black-owned businesses. I mean, there's here in Chicago, there, Semicolon is the only Black women-owned bookstore. And they are amazing, and you can buy online, so you can still get the conveniences that you get from ordering from an Amazon, but you're supporting a small business. And so can we shift some of our spending and some of our, the way that we're prioritizing to that, so that we can, otherwise we're going to, I mean, this pandemic, what makes me really scared about it besides everything is the fact that we have potential to lose an entire generation of small businesses because they aren't able to survive this and compete and stay afloat. And so it's on all of us to do a little more work. I mean, I remember when we were talking about starting a company, a lot of the feedback I was getting from probably, you know, family and friends even was like, they were looking at me a little wide-eyed and saying, wow, you're really like, you really are going to try to change the world, or you're really talking really big. And is that even possible? So I think that can happen a lot too, when you are trying to do something that is, that has potential to have real impact and change, is the feedback can be, you're just one person. And so like, I think you need to kind of tone it down, but it has to start somewhere. It has to start with someone. And just because you can't do it everywhere doesn't mean that you can't do it anywhere, right? So start with just what happens in your day-to-day life and make some different decisions, and then start to watch how that ripple effect makes change.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Okay, Erin, we are coming up on the hour. Okay. I need to ask you, can you come back on this podcast?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. schedule that right after, because I have a million questions. Like, we haven't talked about being a female founder. We haven't talked about working from home. We haven't talked about motherhood and marriage.
I mean,
I want to talk politics.
Right. And we need to do all this. And this next time, we need to, I have a lot of lovely women-owned spirit and wine companies that we should be having a cocktail.
Okay, yes.
For those conversations. Yeah, but I guess like, to maybe try to answer those seven other topics in like one summed up sentence, I think what I would say is, you know, and I'm 38, right? So like I'm at a point where I know who I am. I know sort of what I care about. I know who I care about. And when you start to say those things out loud and you start to put them out there, two things will happen. You will have people that feel seen for the first time through your words, and you might be saying them on a podcast, you might be saying them in writing, you may be saying them on a panel, whatever it looks like, right? But people start to see themselves in your story, and so it acts as inspiration and motivation. And the other thing that will happen is it will stir up something in people that have other things going on. And it strikes a chord with people sometimes. And the way that they react is actually not about you, it's about them. And so what I've had to learn is the difference between those two things and where I'm going to spend my time and energy. And for all the companies that are doing this work right now, the same thing applies to them. When they put themselves out there and they say what they care about and they say Black Lives Matter and they say that they're committed to putting more women in positions of leadership and more Black people in positions of influence, they're going to have a huge line of people supporting them that have their backs and that are spending their money with them. And they're going to have people on the other side that don't want things to change, right? Because change is scary, right? But change is inevitable. Growth is optional. And so that's what I'm opting for in all of those facets of my life, is like accepting that I am totally flawed and complicated. And yet I am a firm and strong believer in what I think is right and what's needed. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it or water it down for anyone.
Wow. You are my motivational speaker. I love it so much. Oh my gosh. Okay. Shout yourself out. Where can girls learn more about you and have her back?
Yes. Find us on all places social at Have Her Back. That is our handle on every single property, Insta and LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter. I am too old to understand TikTok, although Alyssa understands it. But anyway, and then haveherback.com is our URL, and we are coming up on our 1 year anniversary. So if you're not already following us in any of those places, head over there so that you can hear about all the fun things that are going on. And we've decided that I think that we're almost to 1,000 followers on Instagram, which I'm really hoping that like in 5 years, we're going to be like, how cute was that podcast where I was almost to 1,000 followers on our Have Her Back handle. But the 1,000th follower is going to get some great HHB swag come our 1 year anniversary. So head over and, you know, keep fighting the good fight.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. Can't wait to have you back on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I will talk to you later.
Bye.
Hey, Charge Girls, good morning. Yes, I'm talking to you. It's time to get charged up, cause this day is anew. The sky says hi and it's bluer than blue. The sun is shining and all the birds are chirping too. Today is the best day to be alive. The miracles appear once you open up your eyes. Surprise! Time to keep living your dreams. So get up and join the rest of your charge team.